Since the 1970s, the Achenese people of northern Sumatra have been fighting for their independence from Javanese-centered Indonesian rule. Rich in natural resources such as oil and natural gas, advantageously situated near the Straits of Malacca, and for many centuries serving as the primary point of departure from Southeast Asia for the Muslim Hajj, Aceh has been of vital importance for a host of corporate, colonialist, and religious interests. Aceh grabbed the world's attention in December 2004 when it was ravaged by the most catastrophic natural disaster in recent human memory. We are joined by Anuradha Mittal, director of the Oakland Institute, who will help contextualize the effects of this disaster and expand on increasing militarization of the region.
I'm Anuradha Mittal. I'm founder and director of the Oakland Institute, which is based in Oakland, California.
Could you outline for us the roots of the Achenese independence movement? What are some of the historical, cultural, and religious reasons behind the Achenese people's desire to be independent of Indonesia? What has been the official response by the Indonesian government to the Achenese independence movement until right now?
Well, most of the listeners might not be aware of this fact because usually the image that is painted of Aceh is one of a very poor region, that it is actually a very rich region, rich in oil. And like a lot of other parts of the world, it's the local poor, it's the local people who do not benefit from these amazing resources that they have. They have been exploited, the deals have been cut out with multinational corporations. When Suharto was in power, this right-wing dictator in Indonesia, basically excluding local people from any kind of benefits of those natural resources. And that is really is at the bottom of this conflict in Indonesia, where the Achenese are demanding sovereignty because they feel that the government which has been imposed upon them is a government which does not represent their aspirations or their needs, but is more interested in filling their own pockets and negotiating with multinational corporations. And the recent tsunami, they really view it as a second tsunami because they feel that the local people feel that this whole exploitation of the resources, which has gone on forever, is the first tsunami. The imposition of martial order by the Indonesian government has been the response of the government when it came to dealing with the people and their demand to basically be able to determine if they want to be a part of Indonesia or not. So it is a very similar situation to what we saw in East Timor, where after a lot of international pressure, the people could vote and they voted for independence. And then we saw the Indonesian military move in and we saw killings of hundreds of people in East Timor. So it's the same kind of response that we've seen from Indonesia when it comes to the movements, the local movements in Aceh, where people are demanding sovereignty, the demanding determination of how their resources should be used.
I want to focus in on what happened in Aceh, what has been happening in Aceh since December when the tsunami hit. What kind of emergency responses have we been seeing immediately after the tsunami hit by the Indonesian government?
Well, according to our fellow Andre Vlecek, who just spent several weeks in different villages in Banda and Aceh, his report, which is available on our website, clearly shows that the Indonesian government had shown a very inadequate response right after tsunami struck the Indian Ocean, and especially Aceh was one of the worst affected areas, where it is estimated that nearly 200,000 people have been killed and displaced by tsunami. So we saw basically the equipment is there, the military hasn't moved in, there are reports of people not being given access to aid. In fact, the kind of brutalization has continued. In fact, the post-tsunami chaos is being used by the Indonesian government to basically suppress the local movements which have been asking for autonomy and freedom in Aceh. So it has been a complete failure, and as I said, the report is available on our website, www.oaklandinstitute.org. You find, complete apathy when it comes to helping out the local people. You find no aid getting to people. You find children, there are reports of children being taken away from their parents. You find reports of dead bodies still floating around in stale water and buried under dead trees.
Now, there have been reports from human rights NGOs that have sent support workers to the region that, in fact, part of the Indonesian military, as you mentioned, is using this tsunami as a way to focus in on a lot of the independence movement. Could you elaborate on this? How is the Indonesian government using the tsunami and their increased presence in that region to further their own motives and move away from actually doing support work for those victims of the tsunami?
Well, according to our fellow, what was reported to the Oakland Institute is that hours after this big wave had killed more than 200,000 people, the government of Indonesia made no effort to launch a massive rescue and relief operation. At that time, only six C-130 transport airplanes were mobilized, and even these were not ordered to take off immediately. At the same time, now we have over 50,000 Indonesian military personnel, estimated 50,000 of them, present in Aceh. Their basically job is to kind of overlook and kind of overseeing, and terrorizing the local people. There are reports of them going on these motorcycle brigades and beating up the villagers who they think are supporting GAM, the freedom fighters who are demanding freedom for Aceh. So those have been the kind of reports. We have also heard many reports of how relief work has been really about bringing in the volunteers who are from their own party to move into Aceh to present this whole image of helping out the communities that have been affected, but it's not really so. It's really been military presence, which is humiliating, which is intimidating the movements on the ground.
And what has been the response by GAM, the Free Aceh Movement?
Well, I think initially we also saw reports of Indonesian military and the government sending out these warnings to international groups that they should be worried and scared of GAM. But GAM has basically come out very clearly thanking the international community for moving in and helping the people of Aceh. In fact, Andre was told by one of the people that thank you so much for being here, because as long as you are here, we know that we are safe, the people of Aceh are safe. Because as I said before, this whole post-tsunami chaos is being used by the Indonesian military to suppress the local movement, which is asking for justice, which is asking for freedom.
I wanted to ask you how the relief efforts by the Indonesian government are being seen outside of Aceh, for example, in places like Java and Borneo and other parts of Indonesia. Are these stories about human rights abuses, increased militarization, getting out to the rest of the Indonesian public?
You know, it is really unfortunate that though Banda and Aceh and Jakarta and Java, they're on the same country, but there's very, very little information. Really, for example, in the capital, in Jakarta, about what is really happening on the ground. And you have to look at it historically. Historically, you find Indonesian media has been controlled by the local elites or by the national elites who are based in Jakarta. So the people in Indonesia have very little information about what's really happening in Aceh, just as people in Jakarta did not know what was happening in East Timor a few years ago. So given that situation, it is not at all surprising that in a poll that was run by Metro TV, it showed that the people in Jakarta saying that they thought that the government's response to tsunami was slow, but it was adequate. So given that there is no real flow of information, that there is no real independent media which can tell people about what's happening in other provinces and other areas, people do not know, and therefore they also do not care.
And internationally, is there any sense of how these kind of issues are getting out?
Well, again, I think it has been kind of unfortunate because on one hand, the international community has focused on tsunami and has focused generously by, you know, reaching into the checkbooks and pockets to donate as much as they can. And we have kind of felt good about aid. But we are not hearing much about the other kind of aid which is happening, which is very, very controversial and we need to be looking at. For example, United States, which was forced to break off its military ties with the Indonesian military in 1999 after the military went on a killing rampage of hundreds of people in East Timor after they voted for in favor of independence from Indonesia. Those links are being revived in the name of aid. And Bush administration has been very keen to revive those links, especially since September 11th, since they see Indonesia as a key ally in this in their war on terrorism, given everything that Indonesian military has been doing in Aceh, because most of the GAM fighters are Muslim. So given that history, it is very controversial that after this breakup of ties between U.S. administration and Indonesian military, we see a revival of it. Condoleezza Rice is talking about restarting the International Military Education and Training Program, basically which would have a U.S. training Indonesian officers in warfare, completely ignoring the human rights abuses that continue in Indonesia. They're talking about, you know, in January they sent spare aircraft parts, you know, which were valued at over $1 million. And there is some talk about basically that the ban on the sale of weapons to Indonesia might also be removed very soon. So all that kind of, you know, those linkages that are happening in the name of aid are very, very scary, because as human rights experts and groups will tell you, that in the past, this kind of linkages have been used to suppress independence movements in East Timor. They have been used to basically suppress dissent in the country.
Could you give us your perspective on why the international community has, as of yet, not intervened on this situation in Aceh with regards to the human rights abuses after the tsunami, but even before that, the human rights abuses that the Indonesian government has been imposing on the people of Aceh since the 1950s?
Well, I think a huge big issue in terms of Aceh is, and the international community, is that very often we do not have the information. As I said before, you know, Aceh had been closed off to foreign journalists for a long time. And right now the people of Aceh are very glad that because of tsunami, you suddenly have this presence of foreigners, so they feel they have found a voice. And that's what our fellow Andrei Vlecek was told over and over again. Thanks to tsunami, we can see the foreigners and we have found a voice to tell them about what's happening in our region and in our country. But because of that ban and because of the martial law and the fact that the Indonesian government was determining who went into Aceh, it was very difficult to get the struggle of the people out. And so I think this is a real opportunity that people, while they are there, that we need to be hearing what's happening in Aceh. So as an international community, we can take action. On one hand, we can put pressure on Indonesian government to respect basic human rights and to fulfill what the people are asking for in Aceh, or, you know, referendum to be able to decide if they want to be a part of Indonesia or not. At the same time, we have a job as international community to make sure that our governments, for example, the U.S. government, does not go back to its past history of supporting dictatorships and supporting military, which are famous and notorious for the human rights abuses.
In terms of natural resources and maybe corporate interests, could you shed some light on why there has maybe been some hesitation to get involved in this struggle because of Aceh's rich, rich base in natural resources and the fact that it could and is very much being exploited?
That's an excellent question. As I said before, Aceh is very rich in natural resources. And when Suharto was the president of Indonesia, and I would mention that it was in 1965, that it was the U.S. that had supported his coup against Sukarno and helped him gain power in Indonesia. But he turned out to be a dictator, and basically what he did was he signed several deals with multinational corporations, signing of these contracts for these natural resources in Aceh. And for him, these deals brought a lot of bribes. At the same time, the people of Aceh, the working poor, they got almost nothing. So if the Achenese vote for independence, it is very possible that the contracts would have to be negotiated. And this is one of the reasons, one of the main reasons, that so far why no foreign power country, G7 country, has actually expressed support for such a vote in Aceh, which would, if held right now, most probably would lead to Achenese saying that they want freedom from Indonesia. So it is, of course, the vested interest of these big, powerful countries who are also controlled by multinational corporations, who fear that if Aceh voted for independence, they're looking at renegotiating the contracts with the people of Aceh.
How close do you think the Indonesian people are to this vote on sovereignty?
You know, that's a difficult question to answer. In one case, you know, you can look at East Timor and we can look at the long struggle that people went through and the kind of bloodshed that took place, which finally brought in the international pressure and got the people to vote. So I don't know what it's going to really take, because this bloodshed has continued, this exploitation has continued for a very, very long time. And as I said, a lot of foreign powers are involved in it and they have a vested interest. So right now the future of Aceh is uncertain. At the same time, it will depend on the will of the people, people in Aceh. At the same time, the international community that believes in social and economic justice for all, which believes in democracy and freedom for all, and not the Western liberal concept of democracy, but really takes a stand so the people of Aceh can actually have a voice and determine their own future.
We were joined on the line by Anuradha Mittal. director of the Oakland Institute, which is a nonpartisan think tank utilizing research, analysis, and advocacy to promote and ensure public participation and fair debate on critical economic and social policy issues. For more information about the Oakland Institute, please visit their website at www.oaklandinstitute.org. That's www.oaklandinstitute.org.